issue of taking revenge. Is a person permitted to take revenge according to the Torah? What do we mean by revenge? Before we go any further, what does revenge entail? Of course, there's a passage in the Torah which says Lo Titom, which is revenge. Nekama is revenge. Before we go any further, we have to explain what do we mean exactly by revenge. Even that is a hard thing to explain. When speaking about revenge, we have a certain concept in our mind where, it's killers. Certain people hurt somebody, and they come back and they wipe out a whole family and took revenge. So that's, we associate revenge with doing something terribly drastic. But according to the Torah, it's not so simple. It's relatively simple. A person can be guilty of revenge in a relatively harmless kind of way. In fact, in engaging in a behavior which I think many people would think is quite okay, is quite acceptable. That's what people think. That's what I'm saying. People will acknowledge that revenge in general is bad, but when they think about revenge, they're not looking at it the way the Torah does. For example, the Rambam gives us an explanation. For example, let's say that you ask someone if you could borrow their earrings. I try and tell the example to the group. Then the fellow said, notice that, I know why. You want to borrow somebody's jewelry, which is extremely important to you and so forth. Or you want to borrow somebody's car because you need it for something important, the doctor's appointment, and so on and so forth. And they say, no, they don't want to lend out their car. They don't want to lend it out. Or they don't want to lend out their jewelry, whatever the case may be. And then, a day later, the next day, to whatever, it really doesn't matter. As sometimes happens, you know, people don't plan in advance, they don't realize at the time that the situation can be reversed. Now this person is desperate. They never imagined that it could happen to them, but now they find themselves in the same situation. And for whatever, they overlook the fact that they just turned you down very recently. Now they come to you, and they ask you if they can borrow your car. We'll stick to the car thing. Now, what should your attitude be in such a case? What should you do in such a case? What should you do? What would be the correct thing to do? Is this a matter of choice? First of all, is this a matter of choice? Not every contingency is covered by the Torah. Is it a matter of choice? Optional? And therefore we can speak about a preferred response, or we can speak about a negative response, but basically you can do more or less as you please. Or is it a Torah question? It's very interesting to note how many situations in ordinary life, which we take for granted as being completely in our control, are not really in our control. We have to consult the Torah. So that's something that we should bear in mind. Now what would you say? Suppose you heard about a neighbor of yours, a case arose, and they said, look, I mean, I can't just ask you for the same thing. And you were quite selfish about this, in my opinion. You were quite selfish. You don't lend it out, so I don't feel obligated to lend you my car. Now, what would you say to such a response? Basically, you weren't nice to me. I needed it. Let's be honest. Let's be realistic. I asked you in a nice way. You weren't using the car that afternoon. Let's get the facts straight. Because if the person was using the car that afternoon, they're not obligated. So your car just sat around all day doing nothing. I had to dip, slept all the way to the city with trains, with the kids, with everything. I had a horrible day. Be honest, I don't feel like lending you my car. I don't feel any obligation to you because you wouldn't lend it to me. I'm not going to lend it to you. I'm not going to lend it to you because you didn't lend it to me. Had you loaned it to me, of course, I would lend it to you. Now I'm asking you, is there revenge? And you say, no, I understand your position. Tit for tat kind of thing, exactly. So, is that it? Am I being fair in stating your position? No. That, I think, in terms of general opinion that people have, the position of Renee, most people would find reasonable. They might not agree. They might not agree with you. But I... I agree. I'm not saying that that's what you would do. But you're saying that for a person to take a chance, it would not be regarded as Revenge, fine. Marlene says it is revenge. And I would say this, that most people, if you ask them, would find Renee's position reasonable. They may agree or disagree, but I don't think anybody would consider that to be a bad character change. The person with the Hatchin attitude, I think most people in the world, decent people, would say that, okay, I may not agree with you, but I can't condemn what you're doing. It's not something to be condemned. Now, according to the Torah, if a person does that, and it's good to know now, if a person should do that, then they're over. Not only is it wrong, but they're violating a negative commandment, Lo Tikum. That's what the Rambam says. The Rambam gives that illustration. And he gives a simple case. He says, on that level, day on the first day, one person came to the person and asked to borrow their object, whatever, tool, he lists a tool, an axe, whatever it is, a shovel, and the person refused. No, I don't want to lend it to you. Now the second day, this other person, one thing, I just want to make one thing clear though, I think we have to clarify. There might be a scenario in which this would not be a venue. I just want to get the facts straight. The second day this person comes to borrow from you, the same person, of course. Obviously the same person. And he says, I will not any mashulcha, when that person comes to you and you say, I won't lend it to you, just like you didn't lend it to me when I asked you. That's part of it. I want to make it clear, because there can be a situation where you refuse to give the person something. It could be related to the fact that he didn't give it to you, and it need not be revenge. You have to be clear as to why you're not giving it to the person. If you're not giving it to the person due to the fact that you're getting back at them, like you dislike them now, because they didn't do it to you, then that's revenge. However, if, let's say you're not in the habit of lending certain things out, but you do lend it out to people who you regard as being on a certain level, kosher people, let's put it that way, kosher, everybody knows that. You know, kosher people. So if you don't want to lend out your car in general, but for certain people that you consider kosher, you will do it. And up until now, you regard that person as being kosher. I'm told you have to be honest, though. It's not a personal grudge. And as a result of the fact that when you needed something, they wouldn't lend it to you, this reveals to them that they're petty. So now, you're not getting back at them, but now they're no longer in the category of people that you would be willing to lend to. That's different. I mean, there may be a fine line here, and you may be a little bit emotional in drawing that line. So that's something else. But if that is the truth, if it's not because you harbor any ill feelings towards that person, it's rather because, as I said, from the fact that they didn't lend to you, you now learn something about their character, and they're no longer, objectively speaking, on the level that you would require, so then it's not a matter of revenge. You understand the difference. It's a little different. But we're not concerned about that. I'm concerned about the case where it's tit for tat, as you said, where you didn't give it to me, I'm not going to give it to you. So the Rambam says clearly that that's revenge, and it would apply to many cases. I mean, it doesn't only have to be, this is the objective illustration. But in any case, whenever you do something to a person, if you feel that a person wasn't nice enough to you or ignored you, whatever the case may be, and because of this, you act towards them, then you won't invite them to a certain function which normally you would invite them to, or you'll put them in a situation or seat them at a table, whatever the case is, whatever you do to the person, and the only reason you're doing it is because you want to get even with that person, so then you're involved in taking it away. Okay? Now the main question I want to address myself to is, what is the underlying philosophical defect behind this? The Torah obviously considers this to be a very serious matter, and from the superficial standpoint, while you may say it's petty, you may say you should be above that kind of thing, you don't really see it as being such a terrible defect. The Torah does view it as a defect. So our objective today is to seek to understand that in accordance with the interpretation of the Rambam. In point of fact, there is a a difference of opinion, a machlokas between the Rambam and the Sefer HaChinuch. I don't think we'll have enough time to cover that. So we'll be if I can cover the Rambam's position and the questions that will emerge and elucidate them, I'll be content. But first, I just want to clear up the ear. You're answering enough, and in a sense, Renee is correct. In one category, it's inaction. In terms of halacha, you wouldn't get malchus. You'll not get lashes, canines. In terms of the Torah, this is inaction, because there's no specific mitzvah. So though you violate the law, you would not get malchus. However, in the that would be in a different kind, not in the legal sense. That's the action. The action is an act of revenge by refusing, by letting the person know, by treating him differently, by failing to give him what he wants. You see, that's considered to be the action. It's an act of aggression. In other words, in a different context, it's an act of aggression. I'm doing an act of aggression because I would lend you the car, but I'm not lending you the car because you didn't lend it to me. That's an act of aggression, which is brought about by the fact that he mistreated you. So that's revenge. Okay? If you don't lend this object out in general, so then it's not a matter of revenge. You're not obligated to lend everything out. I didn't say that. I'm going on the assumption the Rambam doesn't use a car. Maybe the car wasn't the perfect example, because people are very finicky about letting out their car. So that's something else. Some people do, some people don't. But let's take it's an object, the cup of sugar kind of thing. Borrow a cup of sugar. Let's take something which you are very happy to always lend. In this case, I'm not going to lend it to you. You may, because I wanted to borrow from you, and after you put me through the trouble, now you don't. That's different. Point number one. You should have, obviously, before you ask, there are certain things you're not going to ask to borrow, because you realize that there are certain things that people don't like to lend out for perfectly valid reasons. A car, let's say, or a very expensive car, whatever the case may be, you may have very valid reasons. So, of course, you shouldn't put the other person on the spot. That's the opposite of all. You should realize, just like you wouldn't want to lend out certain things because they have special needs to you, so why should you demand it of somebody else? But if you have trouble lending things out, now, according to the Torah, basically that's a mitzvah, really, to lend. Just like it's a mitzvah to lend money to a person, in kesef tal v'tami. But in kesef tal v'tami, if you do lend money, but the Gemara interprets it to mean that it's a chiyuv. It's just like it's a chiyuv to give tzedakah to an ani. The second point you're making, as far as if you have a problem with lending him out, I just mentioned that's a mitzvah. If you have the person needs a loan and you have the money, obviously you can afford it. So then you have a chiyuv to lend them money, and of course you can't collect interest. And that applies with regard to objects as well. If the person needs an object, and you have no valid reason for not lending it to him, so then he needs a tool. You have a tool, it's not doing anything. You should lend it to him. Of course, a person needs to borrow the tape recorder, so you should lend it to him. You don't need it right now. Of course, if you're talking about something which is extremely expensive and there's people to mess it up, and that kind of thing, that's something else. But in general, to just refuse a person, because it's yours, you know, you have this attachment to your objects. You don't like people using your objects. That's a violation of the Kesef Tal V'Tami. You have to lend. So if you have a problem lending, so you should realize that's a defect. You have to work on yourself. However, that does not preclude your right to borrow from other people. You can be in that situation. The fact that you still have a right to go and ask for something. Of course, that should help you to, when you do that, when you borrow from somebody else, you reflect on yourself. I mean, how come you don't have the same attitude? But frankly speaking, I knew what the question was. No, it's a violation of the obvious. But it's more specific. True, but it's more specific in that in terms of Talmud, there's a particular chiyuv of making a loan. I address myself too is, what is the reason for this? More to the point, what is the defect? Why did the Torah see fit to prohibit it? And the Rambam uses very strong language, more than you would expect. For he says like this, even though he doesn't get malchus, he doesn't get lashes for this, De'ar ra'hi ad ma'od, It is an exceedingly evil caricature. And then he proceeds to give the example. Now, the example, to us, seems okay, a little bit petty, but not an exceedingly evil caricature. So, the question is, what's so evil about it? Wherein lies the evil? Now, if I was to ask you, in terms of your own understanding of things, what's wrong with this behavior? What would you say? There's a difference between wanting to hurt and not wanting to help. It's true that the person will be hurt as a result of that. It's true. You have to be direct in one sense. You're right. My objective is I don't want to help you anymore. Now, of course, by the fact that I don't want to help you anymore, that may hurt you, and it's true, and it gratifies my feeling. I feel better. Because you hurt me. This is normal. In other words, the emotions that we're talking about are pretty much normal emotions. It's very hard to imagine that a person wouldn't have the emotions. Of course, Alan, it's always said you can't have any emotions. The fact that you have certain emotions doesn't give you life. Okay? So, in this context, what's so terrible? I just want to be fair. I, like most people, would argue and say there's a certain element of fairness in human relations. I think most people, well, this is a very high-level group, this is not like most people, but most people would sort of defend it on the TV talk shows. They'd all, because it's all emotion, say, well, people, you should treat, if this person treats you, I treat them like they treat me. If a person treats nice to me, I'll be nice to them. That's what this person's saying. I don't want to hurt people, I want to be nice to people. But I just have one requirement. I like to be nice to a nice person. So a nice person is a mensch. You're a mensch, you deserve my respect. But you mistreat me, I'll treat you the same way. No better, no worse. No worse, but no better. So what's so terrible about that? You're right. So it turns out in this case, I am not going to treat you any better than you treated me. It's going to hurt you? That doesn't bother me. You're right, it may hurt you. But too bad. Face the music. You know, these are the consequences. You treat me that way, I'll treat you that way. A certain amount, we're talking over here is a certain amount of equality over here. Fairness. I would think, I may be wrong, I don't know how most people always view things, that the average mentality of people would not think there's anything so terrible about this. But the Rambam does. And I'm trying to elucidate the reason for that. I think that most people would say something similar to Laurie, and I think it makes sense, but the Rambam doesn't say it. Most people would say that it first of all doesn't accomplish anything, and you're making yourself into a petty person. No logic existing. This person is really, you look down on this person. It happens to be 100% correct, what you're saying. You look down on this person's behavior. Now, why do you look down on the behavior? Because you regard that as being an inferior level of functioning. That a person should be on the level where he's capable of parting with his object. He should be so attached to his object. So this person has that defect. So now you're saying, just because he has that defect, so you're going to have the same defect. So therefore, it's irrational. It's an irrational form of behavior. Except you'll say, well, yeah, but it gives me a certain pleasure. But then, yeah, but that pleasure is only due to the fact that you're operating on a petty level. Okay. That is true. I believe that it's true. And therefore, that analysis would be sufficient to make a good case against it. But that doesn't explain what the Rambam is saying. It's one thing to say that I don't think you should do it. I'm giving you on the level of advice. On the level of advice. But here the Rambam is saying it's a violation of the Torah, and it's a day of roi hiyad l'maot. So what we're talking about is not day of roi hiyad l'maot. Let me explain the reason. I want to present to you the Rambam's explanation. Let's hear what the Rambam says. And I want your reaction. Does it make sense? Is it difficult? That's what we're going to do. Analyze it. Try and understand what he means. He says like this. He says, Elo roi lo la'adam lios mavir al midoso. But it is fitting for a person to be mavir al midoso. What does that mean? To put aside your own emotions. Not to be so mocked. You're right. To overlook your own rights, so to speak. Yeah, to be mofail, even... You see, a person should be objective, should be reasonable. But these are the different kinds of people. Sometimes you have a legitimate gripe. And then you'll find there are people that will not make a fuss. They're very objective. But when they have a legitimate thing, no matter how big it may be, no matter how small it may be, my rights have been violated. They can't rest because their rights have been violated. They can't put us overlooking. There's something about overlooking something. Don't be so tied to the self. Yeah, mob only does the sensitivity. It's a big factor in relationships amongst people. It's a very good quality to have. In terms of friendships, to be extremely undemanding towards the other person and extremely overlook the weaknesses, forgiving towards the other person. To be extremely undemanding and extremely forgiving is a very good recipe for getting taken advantage of. But I mean, for having I think it's a good element. If you're dealing with a person that's taking advantage of you, then you don't want them as a friend. I mean, provided the other person is a good friend, these things will always emerge. It's good in every village, it's good in marriage, it's good all over the place. Don't be too petty. You know when to make a case, of course. But Mavrami Yosef means that even if he's been offended or whatever, he wasn't given the proper respect, he wasn't given the proper accord, understand this. You don't have to have an accountant. You don't have to have an accountant for everything that's done to you. It's not the biggest calamity in the world. There's a universe out there. It's not the biggest calamity in the world. But some people can't do that. You see, they're too tied up to their own particular, their own petty emotions. Very, very hard thing. It spoils life. People that have that to an excessive degree can never be happy in life. Because reality is not geared towards... The way reality isn't set up, it's not been structured to cater to your every whim. Really. Well, let me just finish the statement there. I'll call Divya Olam. No matter what, with regard to everything, big or small. Now here's the controversial statement. Sha'kol eitzel ha-mezinim divrei hevel v'havai. For everything in the world, in the material world, in the minds of the mezinim, of those who have true understanding of discernment, are simply hevel v'havai, it's vanity. It has no value. It's all illusory. The Einam Kedai Lintom Alayim. They're not worth taking revenge over. That's the reason of the Lama. It has nothing to do with what we said before. That just because you did the wrong thing, you shouldn't do the wrong. All these things that we said before, the Rambam doesn't say that. The Rambam goes much, much, much further. He makes a very, very startling, revolutionary kind of a statement over here. He says that there's nothing worth taking revenge for. What do you take? You're not going to take revenge unless you were harmed in a certain kind of a way, right? Something you lost something. If the person, when there's something of value, we've got to talk about something of value. And if you want to borrow a body from someone, you need to get a body from, you're not going to take revenge over a body from. There's got to be something there. But something of the car, something important, then that's where the factor of revenge comes into the picture. So the Rambam says, because you don't have any true understanding. You're overvalued. Right, it turns out, right, exactly. It turns out, according to the Rambam, that there's nothing really that terrible about the act of revenge itself. The fact that what you mentioned before, according to the Rambam, is that you are inflicting pain upon someone, that itself is not so terrible, according to the Rambam. And the truth of the matter is, it might even be a situation where you should take revenge. Which we'll get to in a moment. But that's not the problem. The problem is, it turns out that the act of revenge reflects that you have a completely distorted view of what is really important. And you are placing importance on something which has no importance whatsoever. Anything in the world. There's nothing in the world that's worth taking revenge about. Now that, I think, is a statement which requires some understanding, elucidation, and we should analyze. You know, I want to hear your opinion about this. Is that really true? Is that the philosophy of the others? The Rambam here is stating his philosophical interpretation. And the Rambam's philosophy has to be consistent with everything that we know from all the sources of Torah. Is that really true? The Rambam is negating everything. Negation. Nothing has any importance. So if nothing has any importance, then of course you wouldn't take revenge. You only take revenge because you believe it's important. Also bear in mind that Chazal say concerning a Talmud Chacham. No came, well, one of the prohibitions is no came, is take revenge. There's another companion prohibition called no tear, which is just to bear a grudge. To bear a grudge. Lo tikon for lo titor. Bearing a grudge. Bearing a grudge, I'm not going to take it up then. That's a different session. But the bearing a grudge is, what's the bearing a grudge? The same scenario. You ask, they wouldn't lend they wouldn't lend to you. Now they come to you, and you lend them. You lend them the car. You say, here, take my car. I'm not like you. If a person does that, according to the Rambam, he violates it. A fifth amendment. Here he does the action, gives the car, but just because he says, I'm not going to be like you. You wouldn't, I'm going to lend you. I'm not going to be like you. He violates a prohibition of the Torah, and he's bearing the grudge. We'll leave that aside for the time being. I mention that because Chazal say by the Talmud Chacham, that Kol Talmud Chacham she'eino noting v'noter k'nachash. A Talmud Chacham, a Torah scholar, who does not take revenge and bear a grudge like a snake, ain't no Talmud Chacham. He's not a Talmud Chacham. That's a very startling statement. That's a very startling statement because the Talmud Chacham is not exempted. If anything, he should be the model, the epitome. And his standards are always higher than the other person. Here we're saying if he doesn't not just take revenge, but like a snake. You know, a snake is cunning and waiting and really attacking the other person when they're not prepared. A Talmud Chacham has to take revenge. Or he's not a Talmud Chacham. Yes, so of course the answer, as I read, I see already everybody anticipated the answer. Okay. The answer is very much in line with the Rambam's explanation. Because what it means is, but it illustrates the point that Reva was making the point. According to Rambam, there's nothing evil in the act of revenge itself. It's what you're taking revenge for. By Talmud Chacham, it means when a person has insulted the person. Not that a personal insult. Because a person is a Talmud Chacham, and somebody didn't lend him the car, he's subject to the same rules as everybody else. It means that he was insulted by this person or offended because he represents Torah. Which very often can happen. There are people like that. This situation happens based probably in every shul. There's always a group that are out to attack the rabbi just because he's the rabbi. And, or tell me there's a problem. If the person, what it means to say is, if the person has to recognize within himself, if he has been attacked or humiliated, not because of himself as a person, but simply because that individual wants to embarrass Torah, then he's obligated for the defense of Torah to be no king for no sin, and if he doesn't, he's now Talmud Chacham, because then he's giving into his weak emotion. Then it means he's functioning on the emotional level. That's false emotion. That's the false emotion of compassion. The unwarranted compassion. Which is, as you know, according to the Torah, that's a serious defect. Kol Merachem Alachma. Sof Olias Achsa Alachmano. A person may not have compassion. It is prohibited to have compassion in certain situations for the wicked. But in this situation, if you're too squeamish to take revenge, you're too refined, then you're not a Talmud Chacham, because you're acting in accordance with your refinement. A Talmud Chacham is one who always acts in accordance with his Chacham. But that is fully in line with what the Rambam is saying. That for the Rambam, it is not the act of revenge, but rather the philosophy of life that it reflects, what you're taking revenge for. Let's get back, however, to the basic statement. Is this really true? Does the Torah really believe that there's nothing in the world, in the physical world, that has any value whatsoever? Is that the philosophy of Yadis? Can anybody point to anything in the Torah which would indicate the otherwise? I mean, let's face it, how much energy and anxiety and everything, our whole life revolves around our possessions. Possessions is 9/10 of our existence. You know, on this question, just quickly, although it requires more thought, the obligation of review, Kochech Tachiyah, exists in two frameworks. One where the person did an avera, even though it didn't affect me. B, where the person sinned against me. So, if the person offended you or sinned against you, you should be mochiyah. If the person failed to lend something to you, whether that comes under the heading of ochech Tachiyah, I'm not so sure. If the person is offended, you do a lot for and so forth, and you expect it from them, so then you should be mochiyah. But it could be just any ordinary Jew. I can ask for a loan. I can go to any of you. The lending is not only a mitzvah to your friend. Just like the doctor comes to you. So I can come to you and I can ask you to lend me something as a Jew, provided I can show my credentials that I'm trustworthy and so forth. So if you didn't lend it to me, then I'm not going to mochiyah you or whatever. I mean, that's not a personal, you didn't do it as a personal insult. But nevertheless, you can come to me and I can want to take revenge against you. Let's stick to the topic. The topic then is, the question on the table is that really true? That everything, hakol, etel, hamevinim, divrei, hevel, v'havai, I could point to certain illustrations in the Torah which would seem to be the exact opposite of that. We're saying everything in the whole material world is nothing, has no importance, to the extent that it's not even worth taking revenge about. You should know you shouldn't feel that way. You should be very happy to give the person with happiness, the Rambam says. Very happy to give that person what they want. This doesn't necessarily, a person can partake of this defect, you're not violating the Torah, the law, but you can partake of the defect here without taking revenge. Because the act of revenge is one which reflects a very distorted philosophy of life. Now, there are many people that have this philosophy of life, and they're building their whole lives around this distorted philosophy, and raising their children in accordance with this distorted philosophy, but they never violate a technical revenge. So we have to know this, we have to stop right here. Even if you never, so personal, say, okay, I never took revenge, therefore I'm fine with the Rambam. 1 second. That means you control yourself. And you never allow yourself to take revenge. But what about these distorted philosophy? Do you really, you live your life in accordance with this philosophy that everything, Eichel HaMagin and the Divya Hevel Varai? Then you're killing yourself. You're working 20 hours a day. I mean, you're running yourself into the ground and all the anxiety that you're having and everything, the pressure you're putting on people and so forth. And the fact that you're not even learning Torah. And you're wasting a lot of years and efforts, and you could be improving your soul. Your whole way of life is totally distorted. What about that? Creation long days in Vayishlach, you're all familiar with the story that after he divides the camp and he has them cross over the river, Vayivaser Yaakov Levado, and then Yaakov remained alone. Vayevet Ishimo Adalos Adava, and a man wrestled with him until the dawn. That whole wrestling match is a very interesting story, but we're not going to take it up right now. What we're concerned with is, why did Yaakov remain alone? What caused him? So of course you have a famous midrash, which on the surface does not seem to fit in anyway. Amar Rabbi Elazar b'Lo said, "Shenishtayu apach b'katanim," remained because of the little things, possibly small objects. Little, what you say, trinkets, whatever you want to call them, I don't know, but a small object. Mikama tzaddikim, we learn from here, concerning tzaddikim, shechavim aleihem amonam yosem yigufim, that they love their money more than their very lives. Gemara in Chulin, Tzadik Aleph Amin Aleph, Gemara in Chulin is the source. It's put down in the Torah Tanima. Rashi quotes it, but he doesn't quote the statement in its entirety. Okay? Rashi just quotes the part that he returned for the Pachat Katana. But the full statement is further. We see from here, because the question is, why is he engaging in dangerous behavior? Why is he endangering his life by remaining alone? He should be getting out of there, so he's returning. But not just for his possession, for his Pachat Katana, for the small stuff, which I assume he's gotten the major stuff, has removed it, has been transported. Now he's got to get all the little stuff, the trivia. So what do you see from this? That the tzaddikim, their money is more precious to them than their lives. I have to read the statement in its entirety. But kol kach lama, and all this, what the reason is, why? Why such a tremendous attachment to their money? The fish ain't post your day in the ghetto, because they stay away from ghetto. But post your day in the ghetto, let's leave that aside for the time being. I don't think that goes as far as to explain it, because he's returning to Pachat Katanim. And you know, their money is as precious to them more than their life. That's a very, very difficult concept in its own right. But I brought it up because I think it contradicts what the Rambam is saying. Now certainly Rabbi Yaakov would qualify as being one of the Mevinim that we're talking about. And he says, "Akol eitzel hamavinim divrei ravad." Everything in the world is vanity; it's of no value, and it's not kedai l'inkam aleihem. No, but it is kedai to risk your life over. I mean, and we don't really believe that. We believe that the physical things in the world are important, don't we? 1 sec, yeah. Ani nefshav kamei. That's another thing. Yeah, it says. It says about Dathan Van Miram, that's the chat. That God told Moses to return to the Trank, Mesu Kolan Arshim Amavakshim Ekav Shechem. for all of your enemies have died. So Rashi, who's he referring to? Dothan and Aviram. They weren't Mitzrayim, they were Jews, Dothan and Aviram. And they were his enemies. They snitched on him, they turned him in. And they died, but they didn't die because they were alive. So Rashi just said, Yardu Nechseim. They became poor. And nobody listened to him. And that's what they lost their influence. And now he's Chashiv tonight. Well, we know that's true. Money talks in society and in any organization. So once they lost their wealth. Now, we, irrationally speaking, it doesn't seem to make sense. Overestimation is one thing, but to go to the other extreme, to say that a person's physical possessions are of no value, it's a hard thing to say. I mean, money is the root of all evil. I'm not getting into something like that. Money can be a mean. Money is a mean, basically. Can be a produce great things with money. Right? If it's used properly, it can do great things. Right. This could be a very far-reaching point. Not Pachatikana, though. Again, it can be in conjunction with the Holocaust. Thinking about the Holocaust. Unfortunately, many Jews didn't escape in time. It's very complicated reasons, and I don't judge the people. I say we can learn from the errors of the past without condemning the people. Nobody has the right to condemn the individual. Because I'll tell you, I should be Gilam Koma. And nobody here could feel superior in any way. The criticism is simply we should learn. We should learn how people operate, and we should hopefully never have to be in that situation and not make a mistake. But one of the causes was, clearly, the people couldn't just walk away from everything that they acquired. I mean, they were very attached to their possessions. That was one factor in some people. But not the Pakistan. Those who could get their money out, their wealth out, they left. They didn't just stay behind Pakistan. I don't think. So this is strange, indeed, this Chazal. Let's see if we can make sense out of it. There's no contradiction, in my opinion, between the two. If the question is asked, do the physical objects in the world have any importance? Well, it depends. It depends. And the question, I think, I heard this many, many years ago, in the name of Moshe Feinstein, of Rav Lavracha, had raised a contradiction. That, because Hevel Havala, Makal Hevel, that was Kohelet. He was speaking about the physical objects in the world. Everything is a vanity. That's where the idea comes from. But the question was, but it seems to be contradicting the Torah. Because the Torah doesn't guard after every act of creation in the physical world by our Kinti Torah. So God is declaring that it was good. So how can Shlomo come along and contradict? Can't be in contradiction with the Torah. On the one hand, God is declaring that it's good. On the other hand, he's saying it's all vanity, it's emptiness, it's nothing. It's a good question. And I think the answer that was given is fully in line with what we're talking about. When it says that it's good, when God declares it to be good, it means good in terms of achieving its purpose. Everything that God created was created for a purpose. So, the physical has a purpose. Since man is human, is physical, and has physical needs, it is impossible for him to achieve his purpose without the satisfaction of those physical needs. That's why the Rambam says that a person that lives in accordance with the principle of deprivation and asceticism is a sinner and a fool, and yes, that's the idea of nazir, he has to be a karma. Because since you're denying the fact that you're human, and that's just as much a sinner, because you cannot serve God properly without the satisfaction of your legitimate physical needs. So when God said that it was good, it means as a means to an end, in its proper framework. From a rational standpoint, if a person lives, and a person is obligated to live his life in a rational manner. That's why the Rambam says the way a person should live, the Derech of Chachma, which, for example, in terms of setting up his life, is that before he gets married, there's an order. First he should establish a parnasa to take care of him. Then he goes out and builds a house. That's the parsha put down by Muhammad. You know, he derives it from the parsha over there. And then he marries a woman. And then instead of reversing, like the fools reverse everything. First they get involved, they They get married and take upon themselves responsibility. They have no parnasa. Then they get married, they have to have a certain lifestyle, get into a big lifestyle. They can't support it. And then they go around begging the rest of their days because they didn't set their lives up in an intelligent kind of a way. A person has to have an intelligent approach to life. That's the reality in which a person must exist. And do so in such a way, not just that he keeps and sustains himself physically, but enables him to partake of the true good. Because if he's just sustaining himself physically and he doesn't achieve the true good, which is perfection through Torah and Midos, so then there's no existence. That's not a human existence altogether. In that context, the physical is extremely, extremely, extremely important. You can't negate it. On the other hand, the main Kamach ain't Torah. I couldn't use that as a contradiction. So that's the shot by Yaakov. Yaakov represents that concept relating to the physical in terms of its real needs, its real good, the real good of the physical to the utmost. That's why he had no pachitan. Everybody has pachitan. We all have things. Pachitan means the junk that you don't need. We all have that. We all accumulate it. To the extent that we have it, it means, and I'm not condemning because we're not perfect, and I'm not saying everybody has to run home now and try to get rid of your pachitan. We're human. That means that we're attracted to something, you buy it on the fantasy, then it turns out you really didn't need it. So that means you're living, your relationship to the physical does partake of certain fantasy. It's true. When people are a little depressed, there you go, you go shopping. You see, there's a little pickup, a lift, and so forth. And that, again, I'm not saying that's a horrible thing. You gotta be reasonable with your life. And if you have certain emotional needs and you partake of it, as you go on, you naturally perfect yourself. I'm not saying you should never do these things. But understand the point. Yaakov had no pachim tikkara. It meant that everything was cheshbon out, the best term I could think of. Things that normally would appear to be small weren't really small. See, in another person's concept, it would be a pachim tikkara. But he had everything worked out. That even things which would seem to be small, no, because he utilized, that was important in terms of his perfection. Now, you don't know how that works in somebody else's case. But each person has to know his own psyche, he has to know his own needs, and even if it may be a small thing, it may be a newspaper, it may be a magazine, it may appear to you as a small thing, but a person knows that the satisfaction that he gets out of that is important, gives him a certain emotional sense of well-being, and it's part of his life. It's rational. See, that's why Yaakov returns, and that's why it's chavva lehem to gufam, because everything they have is vital to them. Because they've worked, they're not involved in ghetto. They live their lives in a purely rational way, and they apply their energy to the physical on the basis of this principle. Not to pursue fantasies, but exactly what they need so that they can be in a state so that they can serve God. So that's good for them. That's their life. Their very life is based upon this. That's why what he's saying about Yaakov makes perfect sense. Perfect sense. However, what about the Rambam is saying, I call Eitzel HaMedin to get back now. So that's why it says, Vayar Hashem Tito. God saw that it was good. God is speaking in terms of the purpose for which it was intended. If you utilize the physical as a means to the spiritual, then it's very, very good. God designed the world in a way that is perfect. And the reason why people have all kinds of sorrows in life and they keep getting into troubles and suffering, or failed businesses and then stress and having to deal with all kinds of difficulties and then they get into trouble with the law and so forth, is not because life is difficult in our times, it's because they're pursuing the physical as an end in itself, as a fantasy. That's where all the suffering comes from. Because if a person were to live his life on this principle, he'd find that life is very easy. By and large, the overwhelming majority of the things that we believe that we need, what we call needs, are not really needs, it's desires, it's wants. And all the energy that people are putting into in terms of the physical material, and not because this is what I really need, it's because I need it, it becomes a need. But the need is based in my fantasies, my emotions, or my status, whatever the case may be. It's only a status of something in the imagination. Or an imaginary sense of well-being that comes from being rich and having everything, which is, again, it's all in the imagination, in reality. The reality, if a person lives his life in accordance with reality, then he's a certain decent lifestyle. Reasonable, no one within the context of the society. But my main purpose in life is to have one, and he's knowing that I can pursue a life of learning, then he will find he can do it. It can be done. He'll get what he needs. And God designed the world specifically for that purpose, for that person and for that purpose. That's why the Rambam is saying the emotion of revenge stems from a false idea of the physical. He didn't mean to say that it has no value. But the psychology of one who takes revenge is that he says, because he really believes that he's really been hurt, because he has an overestimation of the physical. He's looking at the physical not from the rational standpoint, but from the standpoint of being some ultimate necessity. If this is it, my whole happiness is tied in with the physical. That's what Kohelet says. Abel ha'volam ha'kolhebel. He doesn't contradict what God said in Bereshit. Of course, he told. If it is utilized in the proper context as a means to the spiritual, then it's tough. But if you do as most people do, you convert, you seek to convert the material, the physical, and make that into the good, the ultimate good of life, as an end in itself, then it's only imagination, however. And we see it in our society every day. The worst thing that happens to people today is when they become successful. Because then they go into total despair. And they don't know what to say, they're not satisfied, and then they have all the physical things they want, and then that doesn't satisfy them. So they're totally miserable, they go into a depression. Like this, the one guy, I mean, he probably committed suicide, this rock guy. Nirvana, whatever it is. He's too soon, too early, young, 27 years old, he's the oldest, everything, and he was totally depressed. But then they go to seek other things, and they can't accept it, they can't. If they can't obtain chachma from it and realize all the progress wrong, and then they judge experience and they don't like it. We have the Torah. But there's no way to escape it. There's no way. If anyone knows the design of man and the nature of the physical, we know that it's purely in the imagination. And when something is purely in the imagination, it'll keep it going until you put it pursuing it. What prompts people to pursue is fantasy. And you know every fantasy has a day of reckoning. Right? The day when the fantasy is replaced by the reality. And then you're into big trouble. So, what the Rambam is saying is that a person who has the proper philosophy of life, whose eye is focused purely on the real good of Torah, will never take revenge. He'll never attribute to the physical, because he knows that no particular physical thing can make or break him. Impossible. It's just the physical. And therefore, since he's focused completely on Torah, that's the real good. And Torah he can have. This person has absolutely no control over his Torah. There's no way that this person can... So therefore, what the Rambam is saying is that you're not taking revenge because of a particular object. It's only because you've associated that object with the good to see the privacy of the good. These are the unconscious thoughts that are going on behind the scenes. That means to say that you've identified the good with something which is physical, that's settled our body with fear in the Torah. And there's nothing in that context which is the guide to take revenge. That's the serious That's a very serious defect. Because it's complete corruption. A person that partakes of this philosophy is totally corrupt. And there's no chance that this person can achieve the real perfection that was intended in as far as God is concerned in the creation. That's why it makes perfect sense. And there's no contradiction. There's no contradiction between that and between the case of Yaakov, as we saw. Because the behavior of Yaakov was based upon a rational, realistic estimate of the real value of the physical. That type of a person would never take revenge. Again, the emotion of revenge comes from the fact that this person really deprived me of that which I identify as the real good. Person has that philosophy. Very carefully. You don't get upset about something which can be replaced, which is at the means to an end. When you get upset about something, it's because this is my, it's so important. This particular picture, this reminds me. I'm sorry. Yes, you'll get over it. Then you'll be annoyed. But you'll realize, so what? So I learned. So what happened? So I went by train. And I sat down, the truth of the matter was much better off, because I didn't have to deal with the traffic. And I took a stay for a long. I remember when I went to YU, I used to go from Rockaway, now I have train ride all the way to the 8th train, starting out in Rockaway, all the way up to, 186 feet. See, the worst neighborhood in the world, I'd go at any time. I used to love that, I did my best learning. I took a stay for no one to bother you. You know, no one bothered me. I know I get a seat because I started at the beginning. A long time. Let me tell you something, though. It wasn't pleasant. It never bothered me. And I used to travel any time, day or night. Because I used to work sometimes out in the city. I'd drop Saturday night. I'd go real late. Up to YU. It wasn't a friendly, happy, you know, leave your door open neighborhood. You would be annoyed. Let's just put it this way. But your attitude, if you're really going through this attitude, you can't get too annoyed over something which you don't really value. Think about it. It's a maturity. In the same way, like the bubblegum example, you might be annoyed, but it's not kedai. The next, like 2 days later, it's not kedai lingam. You wouldn't remember it. You wouldn't remember it because it didn't really harm you. The person couldn't harm you. It's only because you really feel hurt that the person harmed you that you would take revenge. But that's only because you have a false estimate of the physical in terms of the importance. Just to sum up, now we understand more clearly why Talmud Chacham must take revenge. Because he's taking revenge for Torah, which is the real good. That's the ultimate good. For that, you must take revenge. If you don't take revenge, that shows you don't value Torah.